Welcome to the Arts and Antique Radio Show, where your host, nationally recognized certified appraiser Elizabeth Stewart, Santa Barbara's treasure sleuth, will help you put a value on the treasures in your own home.
Every time it rains, pennies from heaven. Don't you know each cloud contains pennies from heaven?
So let's find out. How valuable is it?
Hello, 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 Santa Barbara. It's your Chantress of everything valuable and beautiful. And I got to tell you, a couple of months ago, dear listener, I got a really interesting press release from UCSB. It was talking about a performance that was a collaborative performance and a whole series of lectures about a really seminal part of art and dance history. The show is called Radical Bodies. Anna Halprin, Simone Forte, and Yvonne Renier in California and New York, 1955 to 1972. And especially Anna Halprin interested me because Anna was such a cutting-edge dancer for her time and, in fact, was really controversial dancer. And two of our scholars from UCSB took up that torch and have mounted a wonderful series of talks and lectures and performances, et cetera, et cetera. And I have with me, you have to help me with this. I'll just say Nina Benaham. Ninochka.
Perfect.
So Nina Benaham is here. And also we have Bruce Robertson, who has come on our show before, talking about a show that he curated for the Santa Barbara Museum of Art, The American Century. And I'm interested to know how these two got together and what was happening behind the scenes in mounting this show. But I have to just, I don't know, maybe a scoop here. I got a scoop, which is that this particular show, Radical Bodies, is going to New York. It'll close here, by the way, dear listener. You don't have too much time to see what's going on over there. It closes here April 30th. Then a month later, May 24th, it opens at the New York Library for the Performing Arts at the Vincent Astor Gallery. Very big feather in our cap. And also, come to find out, UCSB dancers will be bringing the show to Hunter College, which has tons of history involved because it was right there at Hunter College that Anna Halprin, by the way, she is now 96, 97 years old, but 50 years ago, Anna was summoned for arrest at that very stage because of her incredible outre, I should say, exposure of flesh on the stage, which isn't that what dance is about. But anyway, I digress. Nina, how did you and Bruce get together on this project?
Oh, my gosh. Well, the real truth is we discovered that we had gone to the same college, Swarthmore.
Okay.
And it's a historically abolitionist, radical, leftist, pacifist, feminist college. And we began to talk over an exhibition that I did at first with Christopher Palafian,
yeah.
Wonderful dancer and
wonderful dancer.
Cultural figure in our community, vis-a-vis the long career of Jennifer Moeller. And I sought help from Bruce as an art history curatorial expert because it was the first exhibition I had done. Mm. And he really helped me to find my way because I'm a dance scholar and I was really interested in the relationship between art history and the performing body. Mm. And so we started talking for a couple of years and we wanted to understand what we could do together with such disparate fields.
So we wanted to do something about the 1960s. We wanted to do something about strong women in the 1960s. And we knew that it happened first in dance before it happened in the other arts. Mm. And we spent 2 years at least trying to figure out a way to take that big subject and boil it down to something small. Mm. And the show is actually built around a kind of historical trick or something, in that these three women have one point of connection immediately, which is Simone and Yvonne took a class from Anna in 1960, mm-hmm. And they've never been in the same space ever again simultaneously until we put them together 50-plus years later. So that was the gimmick, as it were. But it's they're so phenomenally interesting that to put them together just sparked all sorts of other things.
We had a series of questions. And the first was, why does New York City get all the credit for postmodern dance? Where's the role of California in post-war art? What is the role of dance in influencing the visual arts? Oh. We know that Isadora Duncan had a great influence on Auguste Rodin, for example, right? We know that Martha Graham was really the zeitgeist of 30s modernism. But we wanted to understand the role specifically of Halperin, who's the elder stateswoman. She comes from this diasporic Jewish past. They had fled pogroms in Russia. She's educated, like our local woman, Martha Graham, in Denishawn, et cetera. And she passes through this Dewey-esque progressive school system and comes out of the University of Wisconsin-Madison during the Holocaust. And so anything she does beyond that in dance and in partnership with her husband, Larry Halperin, is really going to be about memory and trauma and what will be the healing of the nation through dance. So we started with that idea to connect Halperin to the 1960 workshop as the teacher of these two great women.
So Anna has the biggest goals, which is to heal society. And she, and that's not being recognized, that behind this very avant-garde, postmodern dance, very minimalist stuff, there's actually this kind of human trauma, human heart. That is, of course, California's contribution and Anna's.
Just, it's amazing to me, you know, in the decorative arts, you know, that's my kettle of fish. In the decorative arts, there's sort of a myth, but it's actually kind of a true myth, that in metalwork, you start to see the first lines of a new aesthetic. So in silver and in jewelry, you see the Renaissance revival first, and then it catches on to the other decorative arts. I always thought of dance as a bellwether for change in the visual arts.
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking here, Bruce, Leon Basque, for example, and I'm thinking of Mr. Diaghilev relying on his painters before he actually even looks at his artists, his dancers. So, you know, I'm wondering, did that play into your...
Absolutely. So actually, while I was doing this, I was also working with one of my former students on a big exhibition. It was her idea. She did the big exhibition on dance and American art. So I was simultaneously working on Isadora Duncan and sort of 19-teens and thinking about the 1960s. And the connecting link is Isadora Duncan, Oakland, San Francisco, Martha Graham, Santa Barbara, Los Angeles, and then Simone, Los Angeles, and San Francisco, Yvonne, San Francisco, and Anna, San Francisco.
And it's interesting, now we're bringing it to New York.
Exactly.
That's fantastic. Richard, let's go to quick break. When we get back from the break, you know, I want to ask about the three octogenarian plus ladies who are still, or what their reaction was when they got back together again after 50 years. But also, I want to hear some gossip about Anna Halperin, because I understand she gave a master class. At 97?
Yes.
Fantastic. Let's go to a quick break. We'll get back from the dial. So we're talking about a wonderful collaboration that gave birth to some really innovative ideas and visual feasts for the eyes, Radical Bodies, which is closing April 30th at UCSB, but it's totally worth seeing and totally worth trying to get your head around the deep connection, as Bruce said during the break, with the body and the visual arts. And it's something that's overlooked, because I think it's overlooked until now.
Until now.
Yeah. Because it's always been the abstract sort of static thing
right.
that you're looking at, and not necessarily the flesh and blood.
But, you know, the Museum of Modern Art now has a dance curator, and the Museum of Modern Art bought Simone's early dances.
Fantastic.
So it's changing fast.
Tell me, Nina, tell me about Anna's masterclass. How did that go?
At UCSB, it was amazing. You would never have known she's 96 and a half years old. She tried to get students to understand the body as a natural terrain, that the body is an environment, and like a tree or like land, it decays, it erodes. So students from, for example, environmental studies, global studies, even oceanography would want to know about how to make a score. She and her husband, Larry.
Really?
Yes. How to make a dance. Any human being should have access to art as an act of citizenship, as a way of talking about something they want to express. So they look at the body as nature.
But you know, one of the great things was watching these students respond to these women, because these women are bringing that history to them and making it clear to them that if they focus on what means most to them, they'll have a life like Anna's or like Simone's or Yvonne's. Simone did this performance where she channeled her own family's history of escaping the birth of fascism in Italy. And these students were riveted in their seats. I have never been in a theater where you could feel the connection between the audience and the performer so tightly. And part of it was that the students had been working with Simone, they'd been working with Yvonne, they'd been working with Anna, and so they had seen these astonishing women in their 80s and their 90s.
Yeah.
Anna was trying to get students to sort of grow up not to want to be in someone else's dance company. She wants.
I know the feeling.
Yeah. Right. Not to feel that the disciplined, you know, tortured technical body was the be-all and end-all of dance. That dance has a much larger role to play in American life.
So actually, Simone, I mean, this is one of the things all three women do, is they naturalize, they pedestrianize movement. So anybody can do it. And Simone, who has very real Parkinson's disease, is up on stage for 10 minutes. And every now and then her hands would start shaking badly. And she would use that as a kind of flight of a bird. She'd raise her hands up and they'd be shaking. It'd be this magical movement. And so any movement becomes possible for dance.
That's amazing. I mean, the resistance that you hear, my dad is falling fast into dementia. The resistance, everybody, so you know, that quiver or the shuffle is instead of working with it, it's pushed down, suppressed, squashed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting. We celebrate, you know, when a 6-week-old starts to shake their hands in the crib, but we don't celebrate when that shakes.
Mm-hmm.
Signals another life event, another chain of life's historic movements.
Yeah.
That's modern dance told people, and classical ballet beautifully, but that they had to look a certain way. They to do certain things. And Anna says things like, enter your body through your hand. She invents somatic practice. This is her invention, and this idea of the authentic self. At any age, she once did this work in a park in Marin called Grandmother Dance, and she published an article in a paper, I mean, an advertisement, please bring a rocking chair to such and such a place. And a few days later, there were 80 rocking chairs just there that people all over Marin had donated, and it was only for grandmothers, and it was called the Grandmother's Rocking Dance.
But so we actually tried to interview all three of them together at the conference. They're going to be together literally for the first time in 55 plus years.
Tell me again their relationship in case people are just joining us.
So Anna, Simone had been a student of Anna's. Simone moves to New York. She meets Yvonne. She says, Yvonne, what you really need is to take Anna's class. So Anna and Yvonne and Simone and Yvonne drive across country. They take Anna's class. And it's because of that everything happens in New York. It goes from Anna's class to New York. Okay. And they'd met and they'd worked together over the years, but not all three together. But so we're interviewing them about their history. And Anna didn't want to talk about history. She wanted to talk about today. She's
at 96?
At 96. She's got plans. She's totally there. She dedicated her performance to the North Dakota pipeline struggle.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. And the students' reaction?
They're totally in it.
They said they didn't just learn choreography, but that it has changed their lives. It changed my life, they said, each one. And they wrote about it. We created a web, you know, kind of blog in a seminar, and they all wrote about the experience. We tried to create this tripartite learning experience for students. So they would see the exhibit, they would study the catalog, they would do historical projects at the undergraduate and graduate level, and they would dance the work. So that we tried to,
even
to hit them at every level.
The non-dancers would dance the work?
Some were able to come and learn how to move in a somatic manner. Anna invents what we call task-based improvisation, and that's the root of Judson Dance Theater. That's what opens post-war dance to what we call 60s counterculture. It freed everybody. Hippie culture, anti-war culture. How do you resist? How do you bear witness? How do you believe in yourself?
And Anna what Halpert. Is this called? This
task-based improvisation. So if I take your coffee cup and I hand it to you, you and I have formed a relationship. She sheds the idea of the audience. There is no audience. We're in this.
We're in it together.
Life together.
So actually, so
we're stuck
in the museum.
It's like marriage.
We built.
Did you hear that?
We built this. Dance construction. It's just two pieces of plywood at a 45-degree angle against the wall with five ropes in it. And the point is you climb up the rope and you climb over and you spend a certain time. Anyone can do that. And so we have kids in the gallery and adults in the gallery picking up the rope and actually dancing. So it doesn't take practice or anything. I mean, I don't want to know the risk issues involved. I don't want to be there if anything happens, but
yes.
So far, so good.
But it means they're curating the exhibit.
They're making it themselves.
Their embodiment. They are part, they are the exhibit. So everybody, it's really a Native American idea. If you look at a table of objects and you touch them, you've left your energy, your spirit there. And Anna really believes that. It's a part of this healing nation.
So Bruce, who we talked about American Stories a number of years ago that he curated for the Santa Barbara Museum of Art, which was a stellar show. And I remember going to the press opening and having Bruce talk about the works. And he seemed to me the archetypal art historian. He has his doctorate from Yale, specialist in American and British art. The idea of you on a 45-degree rake, hauling yourself up with ropes and being a bacchanal.
I didn't try very hard.
Did you dance?
No, I've gone up the rope a little bit, but I'm not going to go up too far. Simone doesn't go up the rope anymore.
Well, she's in her 90s, right?
Yeah. 80s. She's 80s. Simone's in her 80s.
They're slightly younger. They're younger.
10 years younger.
She's passing her legacy down. She taught slant board, the object and the dance. And she taught huddle to our students, dance majors, in the gallery space. So at the opening, which was very packed, they performed all of these things. And energy in the room was so
huddle is this very simple dance where 6-8 people get together in a huddle, and then one by one, one person steps out of the huddle and climbs over the others. And it sounds boring, but you watch it and you see trust and community and anatomy and gravity and stress, all of these things embodied in front of you. So we did it for the UCSB trustees, and they had no
idea. For the trustees.
For the no trustees. Mm-hmm. They had no idea what was happening, and they were fascinated, and then they couldn't stop talking about it.
Wow. We have to go to a quick break, and when we get back, I want to talk a little bit more about what the name Radical Bodies is actually meaning. Don't turn that dial, dear listener.
Oh,
So Mina and Bruce, we're talking about the show that they mounted and curated and then gave a whole series for all the students at UCSB. And then Bruce laid it on me that the trustees actually witnessed. Was it Anna's The Huddle?
It was Simone's Huddle. Right.
So she said
But they
that.
Are going to witness Anna's paper dance, which involves nudity in New York, because there'll be a lot of trustees there. So we'll get a strong reaction to that one as well.
I wonder. So what Bruce is referring to is that it's sort of a wonderful feather in our cap that the company is going to New York. Actually, they're going to mount a show at the New York Library for the Performing Arts of Radical Bodies, and then going to Hunter College, where Anna Halperin, 50 years ago, was remanded for arrest because of her movement with showing too much skin at Hunter College. She's actually, and so this is what's happening.
This is that dance. It's going to be performed for the first time at Hunter College in 50 years.
But Anna won't be there.
Anna will try, but at the age of 96, you know how bad airlines are these days.
Yes, definitely. But it's not because she doesn't. Has all kinds of bad memories of this.
No.
She's also got quite a year. She's opening the 57th Venice Biennale with her famous planetary dance in May. So substantial staff are now preparing to open Venice Biennale, and also is a very important gallery that does performance art in Athens, especially since the financial, financial crash in Greece, and that is Documenta 14. And she and Larry will also be honored there. So there's she's an international commodity right now.
The Venice Biennale. I was there 1 year. It's huge.
Yes.
Absolutely huge. So what is the name? How did you come up with Radical Bodies? I mean, on the face of it, it's...
I have no idea.
Radical, of course, you think you're wearing red and you're a Bolshevik, but to some extent, maybe that's the history of it. But what is a body that says no to other things, that says no to the establishment? And in dance and art, that means...
And it changes everything radically.
It says no to technique. It says no to pleasing the audience. This sounds like the No Manifesto. It's the No Manifesto. It says no to all the ways of doing things. It's also a choreography of social justice, a reaction, of what can we do to stop the war in Vietnam, for example. What can we do? It can be, of course, brought to any moment in time. What can we do to stand up for people's rights? How do we stand up for the homeless? For example, she had something called Blank Placard Dance, in which she and her company, maybe 20 people at that time, walked through San Francisco with blank signs, write in your own protest. And by the end of the day, thousands of people had joined them and were walking all throughout all the neighborhoods of San Francisco. So she brought a kind of a civic choreography of resistance and love.
Sounds like it should be done.
So that's radical. Again. Radical bodies. People doing radical things rather than just tending to what they might normally do.
So what, now, as far as Bruce, for you, as an art historian from the top echelons, I mean, really, did this change your thought about
absolutely.
The static image or the non-static image?
Absolutely. So the 1960s is this hot moment in American art. It's pop art, minimalism, conceptual art, and all of that. By focusing on dance and focusing on this sense of the body and the body traumatized by the Holocaust and this sense of social justice, you put a heart back in that.
And you put a body back,
and
right?
Body
concept
back.
From concept to body.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly. And it's a way of rethinking that whole period. It's unbelievably energizing and fruitful.
For an art historian?
Oh, absolutely.
And what about Nina, for you? What did this bring to your life?
Well, visual, it was a challenge for me to try to find the ways, the intersections between dance and galleries. What was going on in Soho, for example? What was going on at the Green Gallery? What was going on at the Rubin Gallery? What was going on in San Francisco Gallery 6? How did dance the beatnik poets? Anna oftentimes improvised for the Grateful Dead, Janis Joplin, Jefferson Airplane at the Avalon Ballroom. Yeah, she also was very tight with beatnik poets and had a great deal to do with this kind of raw, spontaneous edgy new way of, you know, of sort of a post Walt Whitman or post E.E. Cummings way of thinking, mm-hmm. in an embodied way, as if you were in Howl, Allen Ginsberg's
uh-huh.
Howl.
Uh-huh. I was thinking of Ginsberg.
Yeah, and jazz. I mean, you know, you think about Miles Davis and Thelonious Monk and John Coltrane, Alice Coltrane. You know, the different ways of thinking that an individual person, not a genre, uh-huh. but an everyday body. Everybody has a body, so anybody can dance and be an artist. So looking at this kind of radical feminist pedestrianism, Terpsichore and sneakers, how can that be in the world, in every art form, you know?
You know, it's fascinating. I just can't help but think, I've been attending some lectures, because I was saying about my dad with dementia, I've been attending some lectures where there's some new work being done saying that these are the faculties that leave and the progression of the faculties that leave in dementia. But they've now discovered that the shake and the stutter and the shuffle and the speaking mm-hmm. without actually forming words is the body remembering rhythm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. And if you answer a rhythmic beat, as mm-hmm. we would say in ballet, if you mm-hmm. answer the beat with this some sort of reinforcement of that sufferer's sounds or mm-hmm. movements, that it actually calms them and leads them into a dance with you.
Mm-hmm. Actually, a very good friend told me that her sister died quite young of Alzheimer's, and she said in the last year, all she could do was they would put on pop songs from 60s and 70s that they had loved, and they would dance together.
Yeah.
No other form of communication, but a very real
everything
form.
Goes, Nina, everything yeah. goes, but dance remains. The rhythm.
Right.
The,
mm-hmm.
the rhythm
right.
of the body remains. Mm-hmm.
I think if we didn't have such a pathological relationship to illness
yeah.
and disability, we might understand this immediately. And, you know, classical ballet is a very interesting, wonderful form, but it was born in an aristocratic world. And, you know, you danced with one of the great dancers, Patti Wilde. And I think that iconography of women are fragile, men are there to seduce you, you know, you're in a kind of colonial fairyland, which is in and of itself gives you lots of freedom as a musician, as an artist, but it's somebody else's story. And these three women, Yvonne Rainer, Simone Forti, and Anna Halperin, are saying, well, first of all, we weren't born with a monarchy, so forget about that.
Uh-huh.
Second of all, we don't want to live in this patriarchal world in which we're consumed and gazed upon. I know that is an ancient form of feminism, but I think that they really resonated with an attempt to bring people voice. And that includes disabled bodies.
It's so interesting. So what Nina was saying, dear listener, was that which one of the three has severe Parkinson's?
Simone.
Simone. And she was doing a performance piece. She was on stage in her 80s mm-hmm. at UCSB, and with Parkinson, that quiver started.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what she turned that quiver into was a flying bird.
Yeah, that's how it appeared to me. It was just beautiful. The arm would go up, the hands would move poetically. It was just, it was her words becoming her hand, leaving her body. Very beautiful.
She also is a kind of an amazing thing. She and her family fled Mussolini's Italy in 1938 over the Alps in a little car with nothing, you know, just praying to God they could get out before their passports were revoked. Mm-hmm. So she comes on stage and she starts talking about Mussolini's chin. And she just picks from moments in life that enter her imagination without whether she thought about this or not. I'm not sure, but this improvised sense of history that anyone can dip into their own lives and
but
make
it has
them meaningful.
But it comes from the body, right?
Comes
oh, yeah.
from the body.
I see.
And again, Anna Halperin, enter the body through the hand. I mean, you can go into the body rather than this external picture, this tableau vivant in ballet that you have to adhere to.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Fantastic. Richard's giving us all those signs with his hands, which means we got to go to quick break and have to thank Professor of Theater and Dance, Nina Benaham, and also our wonderful friend Bruce Robertson for coming back again and talking about radical bodies. Feather in our cap as far as the community here. because the piece is going on to New York Library for the Performing Arts and then to Hunter College, bringing back something that is Californian, really, back to New York, ha-ha, and you guys did it. That's fantastic. Thank you for coming in.
A pleasure.
Hang on, dear listener. We'll be right back with another treat, which is also embodied. Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart, and this is sort of Women's Month, and you know, as art is, I have to say, as art is, it is always prescient. And 6 months or so ago, Bonnie and Ken from Drama Dogs, my favorite performers, they started to think about a piece that was based on women's voices, believe it or not. And out of the ether of the collective, I guess, they pulled some wonderful, wonderful writers and actors and created a piece which is premiering called, well, From Eve's Fair Hand. And, you know, we just finished 2 days ago with A Day Without a Woman. I mean, and here comes your piece. Sunday, March 12th at 3 p.m. at Faulkner Gallery, celebrating Women's History Month. But also the fact that it's very interesting. John, actually, who's behind the camera there, John went to the Day Without a Woman march and brought back a flyer where the theme of our Santa Barbara event, Day Without a Woman, was a kind of Mother Earth, and that Mother Earth embodies love, and Mother Earth carries us. And now we have these voices coming from Eve's Fair Hand. Aphra Behn, George Sand, Gertrude Stein, Virginia Woolf, Vita Sackville West, and then Ginny Weber, who's also a friend of the program's, bringing Amelia Bassano Lanier, Lady Mary Roth, etc. And this is all about what we need to focus on right now in our current climate, the voice of the earth, the voice of the female, right?
And then, good morning, by the way.
Yeah.
Hello.
That's Bonnie.
This is Bonnie. And I was also, as you were talking, what I am thoroughly enjoying about this piece, which is free, by the way, that it is free at the Faulkner Gallery at 3 p.m., it's the voices of women from the past and how resonant they are now, and how sometimes, what was it that Gloria Steinem said? I can't believe we're still doing this.
Yeah.
You know? And here are these voices that have such courage and such hope and such longing and yearning and power and strength, all of it. And I think that's what part of what's going on now and coming through. And this whole piece for me personally felt like a celebration. We had two powerful female writers, two distinctly different styles of writing, who created the piece. We have three very powerful women actresses. And then we're anchored by two wonderful men. So that, I think, brings the whole piece to life. And also, we can't do it alone.
So I want to introduce that you just heard Ebony Lewis, a phenomenal actor, and her company, along with her husband, Ken Gilbert, Drama Dogs. Ken, also teacher, actor, embodied teacher. Ming Lauren Holden is here, an actor who actually is funny. Nina, who just left, who is professor of dance at UCSB, they were hugging because she was a graduate student under Nina.
Member of the PhD program.
Yeah, a member of the PhD program with Nina. And so it's an interesting connection. I know
we only work with smart people.
They all, well, yes.
Smart women particularly.
Well, we know them when we see them.
Yeah.
I would love to have Ken talk a little bit about, because I asked Ken to bring us some pieces from the show. So talk to us a little bit.
Yes, this is an important time for all of us, particularly with the voice of women being the suppressed sound that we're so familiar with. And what I'm becoming more and more sensitive to is I've branded my title of a book that is coming, A Man Among Women, to be an masculine male who carries a feminine spirit, and to understand that so deeply that I can work with women in extraordinary ways, as we have
indeed
worked.
Indeed, yeah.
As you and I have worked, and Bonnie and I have worked together for many, many years. Bringing on Ming this time was exciting. She's wanted to work with us for a while. To bring the voice and power of the woman without suppressing the male. That's what's been fun about this. We were talking yesterday that we don't need to bash the other to make one stronger. And I learned early on that we stand together best when we're standing with honor of each other. And this whole shift of awareness that must come, we must return to the Mother Earth. The Father Sky holds the space for Mother Earth. And what we have to play with is rather than be esoteric, is to find the power of the human condition in this, that we cannot have children without women, we cannot have children without men, and that we need to procreate an idea and a possibility. And the fact that we're celebrating women from Shakespeare's time all the way to the most contemporary...
In this piece,
yeah. Who is Virginia Woolf, that these are women who struggled to find their way and didn't look at the struggle any longer, they just simply did produce their words.
I'm thinking of A Room of One's Own, where you're using that metaphor of built space and space of earth and space, and you know that's what the architecture of that book and The Room of One's Own is all about.
Part of it is included in the piece.
Mm.
Actually, that's what takes us out of the piece.
So, do you have something you could read to us?
Well, we have several different things.
Beginning.
Yeah, we're using an Eve's hand, Eve's fair hand, as metaphor to an offering. And it was very fun. We've worked with Ginny Weber now. This is fourth time. And we were looking at, we always like to brand our title with an image and words. And we were struggling with this one. Our graphic artist couldn't get the handle on it. She wasn't finding the way that she felt right with it. Bonnie and I were frustrated. And we were at a rehearsal. We were sitting at the table at the house in rehearsal. And I told Ginny this, and she said, "It's about the apple." And is it that clearly simple? It is about the apple, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's the apple of knowledge. I hadn't put together that whole idea that we give teachers the apple of knowledge to thank them for their gift back to us. So we began this journey from Eve's fair hand, and we play with the metaphor of the apple. So that's present with us on stage. So as it starts, we come up from the well of all women's voices, and that's the poem that starts the piece. And we have these three strong performing women who bring this voice and the offering of the apple. So as we go, I'm wondering, what do we want to start with? Do you want to begin?
We can start with the first poem, with the first part of the first poem.
Yes. And we'll come into the introduction of the male voice and how it supports what is going on with a woman, and then we'll move on to something else. I'd like Ming to read today, too.
In the beginning was Eve, who sang the song of songs. One note, slow rote, monophonic, monolithic lullaby that cradled half the human race to slumber. Mesmerized, hypnotized to never raise a voice again, except in praise of him who clutched his side and swung a jawbone high above his head and said,
"All this is mine throughout all time, sea, land, sky, the animals, the woman. I claim them all my holy right. I shall dance and sing and paint and write and build and plunder if I choose. My right to choose, for I am his image." So we have two other voices joining us into this cascade of Eve's showing up. So what we'll do is, what would you like to, who do you want to read?
Oh, anyone.
I wanted to go into a character rather than the Eve's poem.
Let's go to a quick break, Ken, just for, and then when we get back, let's have Ming read, Ming Lauren Holden will be back with us in a minute. Let's go to a quick break. Don't turn that down.
Thank you.
Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart. I'm talking with the founders of Drama Dogs and one of their actors, Ming Lauren Holden, about their new piece called From Eve's Fair Hand. It's a stage reading of Daring Women. and you name it, there's some wonderful women writers in this particular piece. Sunday, March 12th at 3 p.m. at the Faulkner Gallery, and it is free at the Faulkner. And what do we have for Ming, Ken?
Well, one of the women who became a man in her image so that she would be paid attention to. So
yes.
We have George Sand.
Uh-huh.
So we meet Aurore Dudevant.
My real name is Aurore Dudevant, but it does not serve me, and neither does my sex, so I change them frequently. You see, after I left my boring country squire of a husband, who did nothing but drink and hunt, I moved to Paris to be with my lover, Jules Sandeau, and we wrote a novel together. It was published only after we had removed my name. Jules and I did not last, but I kept a bit of him in my inspiration for a name. George Sand's books began selling quite well. Quite well, indeed. And George had far more interesting friends than Aurore, and did far more interesting things. Yet sometimes I was excluded from accompanying my literary comrades into certain bars or bistros where women were not permitted. Rather than fight them, I joined them. I began dressing for success. Tailed, tall-hatted, smoking a long brown cigarette. Sometimes I pose a dandy on the arm of my lover and let the boulevard wonder that two men should be so fond. Sometimes I allow an unwitting woman to pour her silly self upon my airs, playing the dare and chewing society at the corner of my mouth. Do you think such habits will lead to other unladylike behavior?
Fantastic. And Ming, tell us, you know, Richard, are we okay? Do we have to go on another break, or are we good?
3 minutes.
Okay. Ming, maybe tell us a little bit about your experience with Bonnie and Ken and how you've enjoyed working with Drama Dogs.
Or not.
I certainly have. I've actually wanted to work with the Drama Dogs for a few years. I got to see Tales of Woo and Woe and Dance Me to the End of Love, which are two really wonderful shows that Bonnie and Ken did, with some of my favorite local actors, George Coe and Jenny Marco, Mindy Toronto when she was still in town, Josh Jenkins. And so I knew that the people I admired were working with the Drama Dogs, and I knew that their productions were really fascinating. And I read up a little more on Bonnie and Ken and the work that they do with embodiment.
Yeah.
I do love that Nina was just in here talking about embodiment. Because
yes.
As a PhD student with that hat on, I study trauma recovery and embodiment as a way to help recover from trauma. I do theater with refugees and incarcerated youth. And so two people who understand drama to be, you know, wonderfully entangled with issues of embodiment and with care of the body and with the centered spine and all of that good stuff that they're teaching me about. They were really, you know, two mentors that I really feel very lucky to work with. And this is a really tremendous piece.
So, all you have to do is see one piece and you're hooked, I know, with the company. Ken, do you have anything else? We've got a few minutes. Do you have something short that you can give us?
Bonnie.
Or Bonnie, do you have something short you can give us?
Ken.
Bonnie.
Ken.
Bonnie will do one of her monologues. Let's do Virginia Woolf.
And I'm supposed to be pained?
No, we were looking through the veil of the darkness.
What page?
Yeah, that was a note she got last night at the read-through.
Welcome
page
to the rehearsal
17.
Process.
Yes.
The Drama Dogs.
Welcome to the... No. I know, I was like, I actually had to ask Ken. Oh, dear. I'm sorry, Elizabeth. Here we go. We will find...
Let's go to 20, page 20.
Oh, right. Oh, I just found...
So what I say is, narrator, to assert the truth as she knows it, a woman needs courage and nerve. And, as Virginia Woolf asserts, money and her own room. Woolf's A Room of One's Own sums up the historical situation of women writers and her hope for the future, when women will be able to take full advantage of the right which she says Afra Ben earned for them, the right to speak their minds. Here's Virginia Woolf in her own words.
When one reads of a witch being ducked, of a woman possessed by devils, of a wise woman selling herbs, or even of a very remarkable man who had a mother, then I think we are on the track of a lost novelist, a suppressed poet of some mute and inglorious Jane Austen, some Emily Bronte who dashed her brains out on the moor or moped and mowed about the highways, crazed with the torture that her gift had put her to. Indeed, I would venture to guess that Anon, who wrote so many poems without signing them, was often a woman.
Anonymous, yes, yes. You know, thank you guys. One more shout out from Eve's Fair Hand. This is actually free. Faulkner Gallery, Sunday, May 12th at 3 p.m. Be there. It's going to be fantastic. Thank you, Drama Dogs.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
Thank you.